Hamas condemns the latest Israeli bombardment of the Gaza Strip, saying the resistance will continue to defend the Palestinians. Iran is calling for a UN resolution to condemn those behind the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Thousands of flights are canceled or delayed worldwide, mostly in the U.S., due to a COVID surge and bad weather. I'm Behrouz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has condemned the latest Israeli air raids that targeted several locations across the Gaza Strip. Hamas's spokesman says that the air raids are another act of aggression by Tel Aviv against Palestinians and that the resistance front will keep defending the Palestinian people until the occupied territories are liberated. According to the official, the air defense units of resistance forces will confront the enemy warplanes. Israeli jet fighters targeted a Hamas training center in the town of Khan Yunis in western Gaza Strip. They also hit Hamas security posts and training centers of the Islamic Jihad movement north of the coastal territory. Iran is calling on the UN to adopt a resolution condemning those behind the assassination of Lieutenant General Soleimani. The Iranian president's office made the call in a letter to the president of the UN General Assembly. The letter says that impunity granted to the perpetrators of the drone strike poses a threat to international peace and security. It stresses that attacks on government and diplomatic officials are crimes against humanity and violate the UN Charter and international law on human rights. It's warning that inaction on state terrorism can lead to devastating consequences for the international community. Now over to Yemen, 4 civilians have been killed and several others injured in Saudi Arabia's recent air raids against its southern neighbor. The casualties occurred in Al-Raqqu area, northwestern province of Sada. Saudi warplanes also pounded several other provinces, including Marib and Shabwa. Human rights groups say that nearly 390 Yemenis have been killed in Saudi strikes in 2021. The report says over 1,400 people were also injured. Hundreds of thousands of Yemenis have fallen victim to the onslaught that Riyadh launched on their country in 2015. The war and its consequences have resulted in what the UN has called the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. Meantime, a human rights advocacy group in Yemen has released statistics of crimes committed by the Saudi-led war on the impoverished country during 2021. The report sheds light on civilian casualties of the airstrikes across Yemen. Our correspondent, Abdulatif Al-Mashali, reports.
In a press conference in the capital, Sana'a, Yemen's Eye for Humanity Center for Rights and Development released its new report on the Saudi crimes committed against Yemenis during 2021. The report highlights the number of victims of the Saudi air attacks and the destruction of the country's infrastructure.
Recently, the Saudi-led coalition has escalated its raids against civilian facilities and residential areas crowded with civilians in Yemen and tried to justify this by saying that there were military activities in those areas, which was not true. We monitor all the crimes of the Saudi-led coalition and the victims who fall in Saudi airstrikes and mortar shelling.
The report says Saudi warplanes have launched over 9,900 airstrikes against civilian facilities across Yemen last year, killing 387 civilians, including 96 children, and injuring hundreds more.
Last year was a bloody year in which the coalition committed the most heinous crimes and killed hundreds of innocent civilians, including children. In the new year, the United Nations is expected to continue its strategy and remain silent in the face of these atrocities. This is because of the financial support that the world body receives from the countries of the coalition.
In a previous report, the human rights group said more than 43,000 civilians had been hurt or killed in relentless airstrikes across Yemen since Saudi Arabia launched a war on its southern neighbor in 2015. It said nearly 4,000 children were among those killed.
As people around the world celebrate the New Year with festivals and joyful events, Yemenis enter a new year of war and siege imposed on their country by Saudi Arabia. People here believe that the years-long resistance will eventually bring Riyadh to justice for its crimes in Yemen. Abdul Latif Roshali, Sana'a.
It is the sixth anniversary of the Saudi execution of top dissident cleric Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr. In the eyes of many, that portended other gross human rights violations in the years to come.
The announcement was short and shocking. In the early hours of January 2, 2016, the Saudi Interior Ministry said prominent Shia cleric Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr had been executed alongside 46 others the kingdom had found guilty of engaging in terrorism and adopting a Takfiri ideology. His trial was held behind closed doors, and he had no access to lawyers. Saudi authorities even reportedly refused to hand over the cleric's body to his family and buried him at an undisclosed cemetery. Sheikh Nimr was a vocal critic of the Riyadh regime. He rose to international prominence during the pro-democracy protests that broke out in the country's eastern province in 2011. Suffering from marginalization, injustice, and repression, the Shia majority region demanded political reforms, freedom of expression, the release of political prisoners, and an end to economic, religious, and political discrimination. The 56-year-old cleric was revered as a leader and hero by the demonstrators, but despised as a thorn in the side by Saudi ruling family. Al Saud finally lost its patience in 2012 and arrested the cleric after shooting and injuring him. He was sentenced to death 2 years later. Sheikh Nimr was charged with instigating unrest and undermining the kingdom's security, allegations which he dismissed as baseless. The Saudi government tried to portray Nimr as a violent radical, but he went to great pains to avoid calling for violence and eschewed all but peaceful opposition to the government. He once urged protesters to resist police bullets, using only the roar of the word. The protests were met with heavy-handed crackdown by the Riyadh regime. Nimr's execution took place in defiance of international calls for his release. Even then United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon urged Saudi rulers to revoke the cleric's death verdict. He later expressed deep dismay at the execution. The trial itself came under criticism by human rights groups, which said the charges against the cleric were a violation of his right to free speech. Days of unrest and large-scale protests in Saudi Arabia that followed his arrest were a testament to his popularity. The death ruling and the subsequent execution sparked even angrier and more extensive protests, spilling over to many Muslim nations, including Iran, Iraq, Lebanon, Afghanistan, and India, as well as Western capitals. His execution brought Saudi Arabia's dismal human rights record under spotlight again, with several international rights groups describing the killing as appalling. There was, however, very little denunciation, much less condemnation, from Saudi Arabia's Western backers. That was obviously not acceptable, but perhaps understandable, given their lucrative arms deals with the regime and its general role in protecting their interests in the region. Yet, there was also a backlash from that self-serving approach, with Saudi Arabia emboldened to commit more human rights violations as it sensed impunity. That was best manifested by the brazen murder and dismembering of dissident journalist and U.S. resident Jamal Khashoggi in 2018.
Now, another grim milestone for Europe in its fight against the COVID pandemic. The continent's overall infections are now over 100 million. The figure accounts for more than one-third of COVID cases recorded over the past 2 years. Some 5 million of the European infections were registered in the last week alone, and of those cases, more than 1 million were detected in France. Europe has been a hottest spot of infections recently. The more virulent Omicron variant has taken part of the blame. Despite the uptick, COVID-related deaths are decreasing in Europe. The daily average over the past week was more than 3,400. That's a 7% drop from the week before. Meantime, disruptions to global air travel going on with thousands of flights canceled or delayed worldwide. Tracking website FlightAware says that some 4,700 flights were canceled on Saturday, 2,700 in the U.S. A total of more than 11,000 others were delayed, with the United States accounting for 6,000 of them. Many pilots, flight attendants, and other staffers are absent from work, either because they're contracted COVID or are in quarantine. Bad weather is also causing some disruptions in the States, with snowstorm particularly hitting airports in Chicago. A search is going on for three missing people after a wildfire through two towns in the U.S. state of Colorado. The fire erupted Thursday in and around the towns of Superior and Louisville, northwest of Denver. Nearly 1,000 homes have been destroyed. Most of them are nothing but piles of ash. Tens of thousands of people were forced to flee their homes in a hurry. Initially, gusts of wind fanned the flames, but a heavy snowfall later helped put out the fire. Authorities now say the massive destruction and snow are hampering the search for the missing. The U.S. president has declared the situation a national disaster. Investigators are still trying to find the cause of the blaze. Now, for Iran, 2021 was a year of transition in both politics and foreign policy. The country also witnessed a deadly outbreak of the coronavirus pandemic. The report takes a close look at some of the major occurrences in Iran in the past year.
In 2021 saw a new administration take office in Iran, and new rounds of negotiations to revive the 2015 deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Iran also witnessed the breakout of the novel coronavirus in 2021, and the belated vaccination rollout, using both domestically produced and imported vaccines, dramatically reduced the fatalities by the year's end. We are going to take a closer look at the major events that took place in Iran in 2021. The signatories to the 2015 agreement, which called for the removal of sanctions on Iran in exchange for some nuclear curbs, came together in April to revive the accord. The United States was, of course, not directly taking part in the talks, with Iran as it unilaterally withdrew from the agreement in 2018. The negotiations started during the last year of former Iranian president Hassan Rouhani's administration. This came after the new administration in the White House publicly announced Washington's readiness to rejoin the JCPOA if Iran returned to full compliance with the deal. And there was the core of disagreement between the two sides. After the US withdrawal, Iran waited for a full year to see how the European sides will make amends for Washington's move. But after seeing no sign of meaningful action, Tehran started to gradually roll back on its commitments under the deal. Iran said it was entitled to do so as per the terms of the agreement itself. For Iran, it was obvious that the ball was in the US court. Washington, however, insisted that it was in Iran's. A sixth round of talks in Vienna failed to yield an agreement to revive the deal. The talks eventually came to a grind in March ahead of Iran's presidential election. Iranians went to the polls in June and elected Ebrahim Raisi as their next president. The former head of the judiciary won a landslide victory with 62% of the votes, raking in 18 million out of the 28 million ballots cast. Raisi said Iran would prioritize relations with its neighbors. Soon after he took office, Tehran joined the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which could significantly boost Iran's trade ties with Russia, China, and other members of the bloc. Back in March, Iran signed a 25-year strategic partnership with China, which would see Beijing investing up to $400 billion in the country's economy. Iran's new foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdullahian, also chose Damascus for his first bilateral foreign visit. The trip meant that Iran would put its partners first. Tehran continued its support for its allies, including resistance groups in Palestine, as well as Lebanon's Hezbollah and Yemen's Ansarullah. With the new administration in charge, Iran also saw a dramatic boost to its vaccination campaign in 2021. Iran's COVID-related fatalities and cases hit new highs in August as the country reported a record daily toll of more than 700 to become the worst-hit nation in West Asia. Under its new administration, Iran began importing huge amounts of foreign vaccines while introducing its own homegrown jabs. This was achieved in the face of tough US sanctions.
South Africa has held a state funeral for anti-apartheid icon Archbishop Desmond Tutu. Tutu died last Sunday at the age of 90, triggering grief at home and abroad for a life spent fighting injustice. President Cyril Ramaphosa accorded Tutu the official funeral usually reserved for presidents. He described the ceremony as a Category 1 funeral with religious characteristics. Ramaphosa lauded the late Nobel Peace Prize laureate as a moral compass and national conscience.
Archbishop Desmond Tutu was without question a crusader in the struggle for freedom, for justice, for equality, and for peace, not only in South Africa, the country of his birth, but around the world as well.
Ramaphosa, acclaimed a human rights pioneer, as the spiritual father of their new nation. Famous for his modesty, Tutu gave instructions for a simple ceremony with a cheap coffin and donations for charity instead of floral tributes, followed by eco-friendly cremation. The South African icon is recognized as a revered leader in the struggle against the country's apartheid regime in the 1980s. Happening now in Cape Town, a major fire burning at South Africa's Parliament building. It erupted on the third floor of the National Assembly building a few hours ago. Firefighters and emergency services are present at the scene. It's not clear if anyone is inside the building, but there has been no report of casualties. The cause of the fire remains unknown. Reports suggest that a fire started in the office's space. Flames are now coming out of the roof. Authorities say the situation is under control. And with that, we come to the end of this broadcast from Tehran.
Is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz. Every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We will be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Welcome back. In the first part of the Aperture, we witnessed various communities which have walled themselves in so that others may be kept out. In urban France, the middle class has increasingly retreated into gated communities. Likewise, in Rio de Janeiro, the middle class seeks to avoid the slums literally across the road from their gated condominiums. Stay with us for more as we explore the wall in Iraq, which American forces have constructed to cordon off the areas of Baghdad.
Abu Hazm's children go to school in Doura, within the walls that encircle the area. So, who wants the wall torn down? No one wants to keep it. What do you think will happen in the future? In Doura, our neighbourhood. Yes, Ali. I want more peace and no more walls and gardens. Sports clubs. Better education. So, less walls and more schools. I want to go to hospital without problems. How about you, Hauser? Take the walls away so I can get to the stadium easily. Tell me, what do you think when you see the walls? We're enclosed. It's like prison. I've tried to reassure them about the future. We talk about it, of their vision, and we all hope things will work out. Life doesn't stand still, it evolves. In the areas closest to the walls, the locals are particularly angry. Look, it's a prison. To go to the market, I need to take a taxi and another one to come back. And the market is only a few steps away, behind the wall. And during school, it's even worse. The kids get all muddy. Okay, I know they want to stop the terrorists, but they could take away two pieces of the wall to make our lives a bit easier. It really affects us. Like from dawn till dusk, all we see is this wall. We all know each other here. We all have different religions, but there are no problems. Yeah, the wall drives me nuts. Look at my legs. I'm sick, and I don't have a car to get there. How am I meant to go to hospital? We're all depressed. Put yourself in our place. If you woke up and had this wall right in front of you every day, what would you do? Tell me. In February 2011, Iraqi demonstrators take part in the Arab Spring. They protest having to live walled up. In the weeks that follow the demonstrations, the government will organize a large-scale communications campaign. The Ministry of Interior takes two busloads of journalists to the areas once held by the insurgents, and now completely walled off. Good morning, sir. Now, would it help you if we remove some parts of the wall? Oh, yes, sir. The wall was very harmful to us, but it also brought you safety. Well, to begin with, yes, but that's all over now. So what would you like then? Leave the wall or take it away? Take it away, please. Where will we put it? Wherever you like. The next morning, it's back to the same area to see if the work is continuing. The crane has disappeared. Just the residents remain, as angry as ever. They never tell the truth.
They promise the war would be gone in a week. Nothing's changed. They say yes, 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 today for sure. And then they come back 2 years later. They built this wall as a barrier between my neighbors and myself. They should take it down and put it on the border with Saudi Arabia. They should have police patrols, not walls. In our brave new world, the differences between military and civilian security technology are becoming blurred. What the army invents to protect its own bases, gated communities adopt for the benefit of individuals.
So when the arm goes down, the teeth come up automatically. That way, if a vehicle tries to ram through the arm, they're going to shred their tires.
Now you have digital zoom while recording the entire area, so you're not losing any video coverage while tracking a person or an automobile that might be coming onto your property.
And present a card, and then this sends the data stream to an access controller, so you can select when someone can get in and when they can get out.
We can put our software, can be loaded on a smartphone. So if there's a violation at the north gate coming into the gated community, the guard can get an alert on his smartphone with the video clip.
There's like an integration of military materials and civilian materials in terms of security nowadays.
Correct. For residential use, it's just a lighter duty machine, as opposed for things that are built specifically for military or border operations, they have to be much heavier duty.
Thais's mother wants to buy an apartment in this condominium that is even more luxurious than their own. But it's even further from the center of Rio. Regis lives on the other side of the railings, just a few meters away, but has never stepped foot inside. Do you have any friends inside? Very few. Well, actually, none. I don't know anyone. But, you know, I don't want to climb the wall that encircles them. I'm not interested in that. I'm just not curious about what it's like inside. I know the kind of person that lives there. My boss, for example. I've never been to his house, but I've got a pretty good idea what it's like. White shirt, yellow tie. Security is very polite. And they don't miss a thing. It's like a labyrinth, a maze. You go in one side and out the other. At least there is an exit. Regis might have said no, but passing the splendid houses every day, he does dream of winning the lottery. Yeah, of course, I'd buy myself a beautiful place. A manor even, with a football pitch, a pool, barbecue. And what about security? I don't know if I'd have any. Maybe a camera and a pit bull. Compared to the favelas in Rio, the Mirai housing estates are havens of tranquility. Hey, no scooters here. It's no good. There are people who live here. And it's not good for the kids. Go on, guys. All they have in common is the absence of the state. When his neighborhood became dangerous for the public services, Zubir spoke to the housing administration about controlling the rowdier elements. The mediator's method is to be firm, but not unpleasant. And there's a place available until midnight for the kids who have nowhere else to go. In the past, it was the community police that did this kind of work. Jean-Pierre Avrin used to be the head of the Toulouse police. He's now left the national force and is working for the municipal police. He'd set up a community policing project in the housing estates of Mirai. The video is barely 10 years old, but is now almost historic, certainly unusual. Relaxed-looking police in shirt sleeves in Mirai.
Mm-hmm.
The police should not be cut off from the people. It won't be effective. The police have to be close to the citizens. It's the only way to make it work. I think the community police I knew was well liked by the residents. They used to call the youngsters by their first names. And instead of fining them something straight away, they'd say, "Oh, if you could move your car, please, that would be great." They spoke to the kids, and the kids would shake their hands. Now, if you shake a policeman's hands, you'd be considered an informer. Nicolas Sarkozy puts an end to community policing when he is the Interior Minister in 2003. He summons Avrin and his men before the cameras to let them know he's not pleased by their results. There are many of you where the delinquents are.
Vous n'êtes pas des travailleurs sociaux.
You're not social workers.
The
principal mission of the police is to investigate, arrest, and fight criminal behavior. When I look at the statistics of 2001, 2002 are bad enough, but 2001, to humiliate police officers live in front of the cameras, I had never seen anything like that before. For those who were present, for the policemen, those who were involved for 4 years, to tell them like that, it was a disgrace, disloyal. In the 3 years after the disbanding of the community police, the incidence of violent crime increased by 48% in Mireille. And the rioting witnessed throughout France in 2005 ravages the neighborhood. If they venture into Mireille these days, the police come in body armor. The area is tough, and not just for the police. The nurses don't come as often, neither do the firemen, and the ambulances have stopped coming altogether. It sort of became abandoned because they were scared about being ambushed by the youngsters, not to mention the police. To them, they are the state. So people no longer support the state. Well, let's say they don't trust the state anymore. In the 7 days spent on the estates, we only spotted one police car, and that was a long way off. After saying we could interview them, the Toulouse police changed their minds. In 3 years, the National Police Force has been cut by 11,000. You can't claim that security is a priority if you cut thousands of police jobs. There was a sharp increase in the number of cars burned, physical attacks, the absence of police on the ground, especially in the more difficult zones. As soon as authority is absent, especially the police, it's like nature, which can't stand vacuum. It creates a replacement authority, which may differ depending on the area or circumstances. I was summoned before senior police officers, and they said, "So, what's all this about them? Is it a militia?" Everyone's talking about it. They felt threatened by it. It bothered them. Calling us a militia. A militia with no weapons. If you want to call us a militia without weapons. Our weapons are words. That's it, really. It's a small aperitif in the open air. Here we are then. We said we wouldn't make too much noise so as not to be a nuisance. After that, we said, "Well, you had better leave. Take your bottles and leave. And don't leave bottles lying around here because they get broken and that could cause a lot of damage." The difference is that if a policeman comes to check us, he might smile, but he's stressed. I don't know if he lives out in the countryside and then comes here, but it's better when people who grew up around here and who know what it's all about and who's who, they sort of understand all of that. We're here to stay with them, sorted out peacefully, quietly like. We're getting ready, it seems, to allow private security firms to take over some of the work on public property, say, which is a terrible mistake, because all it will do is aggravate the differences between the haves and the haves-not. A two-speed security, in other words. There'll inevitably be one sort of security for the rich and another for the poor, to put it simply. the Rocinha Favela in Rio. The city's prefect is about to inaugurate a brand new health center in the middle of the favela. The drug traffickers are invisible. The prefect has come without an armed escort. We're going to urbanize all the favelas in the city by 2020. All of them. Rocinha will change. There will be peace. And listen well, I mean peace. The governor will be responsible. Everyone has a right to live and live in good health. Here's the plaque. So applause now. For President Lula's Brazil, the fight against crime means investing in the public services. The people know it, and so do the thugs. The party's over here. At the same time, we need health and education programs, more daycare, more buildings, and to change the urban policies. All that will transform people's lives. Itamar Silvia has lived his entire life in a favela and was one of the first to benefit from state aid. He's a respected intellectual and a man who is angry. In his view, more than public funds will be needed to tear down the walls which separate the rich and the poor in Brazil. The investment we're seeing today in the favelas is only very recent. It's considered dangerous, a place that needs supervision, otherwise we'll all become criminals. What I say, it's not true. If it was true, there would have been a revolution a long time ago. Yes, unfortunately, because that's what we need to happen. In the evening, there's a big party in Rocinha. A new street has been opened. The government has demolished some hovels and built a sort of avenue whose buildings match the acrobatic and multicolored style of the favelas. Another reason to party. The drug traffickers have hung up their weapons and made way for samba. In the background are the condominios, over which night is falling in complete safety. Tell me, wouldn't you be better off in a condominium? Listen, I've been here 50 years and I'm not budging. It's marvelous up here. But you don't want to be safer? Oh, it's very safe here. Anyone can come here and everyone is welcome. No problems.
Speaking of walls, perhaps we can mention more walls which are undermining regional and world peace. The segregation wall built by the Zionist regime of Israel in the West Bank, Palestine. And the recent wall in Hungary built to keep out asylum seekers trying to reach Europe. And that's it for this week on Aperture. Feel free to share your thoughts with us. Until next week and another episode of Aperture, goodbye. Thank you.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, thank you so very much for joining us on today's episode of The Lantern. As always, it's a genuine pleasure and an absolute honor to be with you guys and to have a share in your precious and valuable time. And I am ever so grateful that you guys take time out of your day to hopefully join in our little discussions that we have. I don't necessarily consider myself as a creative person. I don't know whether it's because of my anxiety that I constantly am in a state of brain fog, or because I haven't dabbled in enough things that demand any degree of creativity in general. But I do understand that in life, you need to be creative. Sometimes you need to be impulsive. Sometimes you need to be spontaneous. Sometimes you need to be innovative. You need to think outside the box. You need to do something out of character, get out of your comfort zone and stuff like that. It might sound cliche, but it is necessary. It's necessary for our growth because there's like, well, some people are born creative. My brother was born creative, God bless him. And some aren't very much, right? But it's definitely something that we can train ourselves to achieve. You know, human beings can do anything they set their mind to. I bet if we really set our mind to it, we could grow an extra limb, but no one's really wanted to do that before, I think. But the point is that some people are born creative and they lead pretty creative minds, pretty creative lives. And by creative, I mean almost every corner of their lives possesses an element that sets their soul on fire. Otherwise, they cannot continue, right? And then some people aren't necessarily born that creative. Everyone has a certain degree of creativity, but they're not like genius creative. And it can be developed. Let's hear a short story. You know what? Let's do that so we can get a better idea of what we mean by creativity. And we're going to be right back.
A man was exploring caves by a seashore when he found a bag with a bunch of hardened clay balls. The balls looked like someone had intentionally rolled the clay and left them out in the sun to bake. Perhaps some children made them while they were at the beach, the man thought. They didn't look much, so he took the bag out of the cave with him. As he strolled along the beach, he threw the clay balls one by one out to the oceans as far as he could. The clay balls would fly and disappear in the ocean. The man threw several clay balls in the ocean until he dropped one of the balls and it cracked open. Inside the clay was a beautiful, precious stone. This excited the man and he started breaking the remaining clay balls. Each of it contained different types of precious stones. He found thousands of dollars worth of jewels in around 20 clay balls that was left with him. He had been on the beach for a long time and he must have thrown away many clay balls with hidden treasure into the sea. He could have had a treasure worth of tens of thousands rather than just thousands if he had not thrown the clay balls away. Most of the time we look at someone or even ourselves and we see the external clay vessel. The vessel doesn't always look sparkly and nice, so we never bother to look inside it. We tend to see and judge a person and deem them as less important than the ones who are more beautiful, stylish, well-known or wealthy. We forget to look inside for the unique treasure that each one of us holds. May we not come to the end of our lives and realize that we have thrown away a fortune in friendship, love, or any relationship because we did not attempt to look for the gems hidden in bits of clay. Let us all relish the treasures each of us hold inside us.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
Just being creative in life, in finding solutions, being able to think outside the box when we are stuck in a box. What being able to look beyond the curb, look beyond that dead end, beyond that wall, it requires creativity. Being able to trust in God and rely on what He has for you tomorrow is thinking outside of the box and being creative. And oftentimes I found that that is the best solution to all my problems. It doesn't mean that I will just sit in the box and do nothing and, you know, wait for God to come around with a box cutter and crack the little sucker open and release me. No, that's not what it means. It means that once I rely on God, once I choose this route of creativity, I will be given the strength to even gnaw my way out of this box if I have to, because I know Allah has something good in store for me outside of it. By hook or by crook, I'm going to make it through this moment because I know God's got my back. That's a form of creativity, I think. And perhaps the best form, to know that my Creator is the Creator of all things, even creativity itself, and that He will create a way, He will find a way, He will make a path. Another way to develop this sense of creativity in our lives is being more mindful of the situations we have, we're in, and the opportunities we have, and not just, you know, passing them by all indifferent and passive and nonchalant. Being mindful of the situations, because once we're mindful, we increase the level of our awareness, we connect with the elements and the situations around us better, and then we are more able to soak in that moment and analyze each factor as it is. And once we do that, we gain knowledge about it. Once we gain knowledge, we can make better decisions, and that, you know, enters creativity. So practicing mindfulness, practicing the art of living in the moment, of being in the now, so you can make a proper decision for the now. If I am in the now, but I'm constantly thinking about the tomorrow or the past, I won't be able to understand the now well enough to collect information and data for it to use in a creative manner in the future. Being mindful, practicing mindfulness, heartfulness, gratitude for the moment I'm in right now, really being still in the presence, is a way for us to develop creativity and just appreciate life in general. Sort of like how artists live their lives, you know? Or photographers. Have you seen a photographer and an artist? Every moment they're just looking for little details around themselves to capture, to savor, to save in their memory, to help them through the unknown of tomorrow. That's all the time we have for today's episode of The Lantern. Thank you so very much for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. Ala bi dhikrillahi tatma'innul qulub.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.